Hey everybody, Flickers of Fear time once again. This is a movie that this is really weird how this came about. I hadn't actually planned on doing this one because I usually schedule these ones, like the recorded reviews. I usually schedule those like a month in advance. And this was actually one that I hadn't had on the schedule. But then one night when I was just kind of, you know, looking for some shit to watch, and I came across this one, I think it was on Tubi for free. And I was kind of like, oh man, I never really did get around to seeing that. And it's a Clive Barker adaptation. And I had heard like someone else talking about it, how it was really good and how it was kind of underrated. So I was like, what the hell? I'm just gonna, you know, watch this one. And if it's good, then I'll do a Flickers of Fear on it. I'll push it up in the rotation. This is the 2008 film, The Midnight Meat Train. Now, as I said, I had kind of heard mixed reviews of it, but I really did want to see it because I remembered the story, which came out back in the early 80s. I think it was 1984. It was in the first volume of Books of Blood. And I remember really liking the story, like some of the imagery from it really stuck with me. And I was interested to see what the adaptation was like. Now, this was actually directed by Ryuhei Kitamura, which hopefully I'm pronouncing that sort of correctly, who also directed, just FYI, an excellent horror thriller called Downrange, which I don't remember if we ever reviewed it or not, but it was on Shudder for a long time. I don't know if it's on there anymore, and we just watched it at random one time, and it's really, really good. So, you know, that's a recommendation too. It's called Downrange, but it's the same director as the guy that did this movie. And honestly, I think this is like a really good adaptation. Really one of the best Clive Barker adaptations, because poor Clive Barker, I guess because his stories are so fantastical that it's really hard to translate them to the screen without them looking kind of shitty or without them looking ridiculous or whatever. Like, because he just builds these whole, like, elaborate worlds. Obviously, Hellraiser was a really good adaptation. But other than that, some of the ones were just kind of, like, okay. Like, I rewatched Lord of Illusions recently, and that one was all right, even though the book was a lot better. And so you know, I'm always kind of like, maybe even more so than Stephen King adaptations, I'm always kind of like leery of Clive Barker adaptations, because as much as I love Clive Barker's written stuff, movie adaptations of his never come out all that great. Just because, like I said, I think they're too elaborate with the world building, and it's like, unless you have like a massive, massive budget, it's really, really difficult to pull off, I suppose. But the nice thing about The Midnight Meat Train, the story that it's based on is actually, if I remember correctly, is actually like really, really short, and it's like pretty simple. It's not a huge, I mean, it's basically just like a guy in a subway in New York City, and, you know, sees a guy that kills people and, you know, hangs them on meat hooks and stuff like that. And then there's a little bit of kind of like otherworldly kind of shit at the end, but it's nothing that necessitates this big massive budget or anything like that. Sadly, the thing that happened with this movie, so it went into production at Lionsgate, and I guess they spent some money on it. It looks really nice, actually. The cinematography is gorgeous and everything like that. But then by the time that it was coming out, the guy that, I guess there was a new guy, like a new head, a new president at Lionsgate, and what seemed to have happened, I don't know if this is really the case or if it's just everyone's perception, but what seemed to have happened was that the movies that had gone into production before he became president, he kind of gave those a little bit of a short shrift so that he could put stuff that he had his name like on the production credits, so he could, you know, kind of push those more. And some of those movies were good, because one of those movies was The Strangers, which is actually a really good movie. But movies like this one, The Midnight Meat Train, that had gone into production under someone else's, you know, auspices, I guess he just didn't really put too much effort into it. Because this movie did actually get a theatrical release, but I think it was only released into like 100 theaters, and then it just kind of like, they just dumped it on DVD. So I think it was kind of like forgotten about, which is kind of a shame, because, you know, it took me this long to get around to seeing this movie. Like I said, it came back in 2008, and it was one of those ones that I was like, oh yeah, I keep meaning to watch that, and I just never got around to it. And then I finally did. And I'm just kind of like, man, that was actually like a really decent movie and a really decent adaptation. Like I said, the acting was really good. The cinematography was really good. The only thing I can kind of ding it for was like the CGI was a little eh, but you know, a lot of it was in 2008. So I'm not gonna, you know, give it that much of, you know, hassle about that. But and I liked the way they expanded it greatly. It has like the same core of the story as the Clive Barker one does, but obviously because the short story is so short and basically is just kind of like one incident, so they had to kind of like expand it out. And I think they did a really good job doing that, kind of like expanding the world out. So what we have is we have a guy named Leon who's played by Bradley Cooper. Now, this, I believe, was prior to him being really, really famous. Because he's really famous now, right? Because wasn't he in A Star Is Born and stuff like that? I mean, that was the most recent thing that I saw him in. But it's like, yeah, he's massively famous now. But this was, I didn't even realize it was him, like, when I first saw this movie. And then at the end, I'm like, oh, it's that guy. Interestingly, I don't know if they did this on purpose. I kind of feel like maybe they did. But Bradley Cooper in this movie looks a lot like Clive Barker when he was young. So it's almost kind of like they were making like a little sly winking, like, hey, it kind of looks like, because from some angles, I was like, God, that looks very much like a young Clive Barker, like he looked back in the 80s. So I just thought that was kind of funny. Maybe it's a coincidence. I don't really know. But so, yeah, Bradley Cooper plays Leon. Now, Leon is a photographer. He lives in New York City with his girlfriend. And he's basically like a street photographer. He's fascinated by New York City. He's fascinated by like the grittiness of it, the griminess of it. And he's always trying to like capture sort of like the essence of the city, I guess, in his photographs. And as the story starts, I guess him and his girlfriend live in this apartment. His girlfriend seems to work, like she works at a diner or something like that. And he basically makes money by taking pictures of stuff and like selling them to tabloids and newspapers and things like that. So he's a freelance photographer, but he really wants to kind of more make it in the art world, I guess. So he's trying to like take pictures of like crimes taking place and stuff like that so he can have stuff to sell to newspapers. But then his girlfriend, through a mutual friend of theirs, sets up a meeting with him and this woman named, I think her name is Susan, and she's played by Brooke Shields, actually, who's kind of like a big time like art agent or a gallery owner or something like that. She's kind of like one of the tastemakers like in the New York City art scene. And if she takes a liking to his stuff, then, you know, maybe that can be like a whole career now, like in art, instead of having to like, you know, sell sort of ambulance chasing photos to the tabloids. So he goes and meets with Brooke Shields. Or Susan, rather. I'm just going to call her Brooke Shields because it's Brooke Shields. Brooke Shields looks great in this, by the way. Yeah, so he goes and meets with her, and she looks at his photos, and she's just kind of like, nah, these are all right, but, you know, she's like, they don't have, like, a lot of oomph to them. She doesn't say this outright, but she basically says, you know, maybe you're playing it too safe, the photos that you're taking. Maybe, you know, you kind of get these interesting photos, but maybe you should have kept shooting, like, when some, like, even worse shit was going to happen, and you'd get, like, more of a visceral kind of photo. So, you know, come back to me when you have, you know, some more exciting shit than this. So he really kind of takes this to heart. And whereas previously he'd kind of been just wandering around the city taking pictures, and as I said, seemed to be, like, kind of playing it safe in the sense that, you know, he wasn't like chasing people around or like, you know, going into super dangerous situations or anything like that. You know, he was basically just taking pictures from like far away and like sneaking around. And so he wasn't really getting all up in it. And he was doing it during the daytime. So what he starts doing is he starts prowling around the city at night looking for essentially kind of dangerous situations or sketchy situations that he can sort of insert himself into to get some exciting photos. One of the things that happens, like the first thing that happens, is that he's going down into the subway one night, and there's this young woman down there, this beautiful young woman, and she's being accosted, essentially like assaulted by like three or four guys in the subway station. So he starts taking pictures of it, and I'm sitting there going like, are you gonna like help that girl or what? Now, but he does take a bunch of pictures, but then he does actually intervene, and he calls out to them like, hey, what are you guys doing or whatever? And they actually threaten him, and he gets some pictures of that too. But then he's basically like, hey, you don't want to do anything to me because, you know, the CCTV cameras are right there, and it's like they've seen your face and all this other stuff. So the guys actually wander off. And the young woman is very grateful. You know, she's like, you know, thank you so much. Most people wouldn't have intervened like you did. And he's like, yeah, I did this time and stuff like that. And he got some good pictures out of it, you know. And so she goes to get on the train. And so she gets on the train and he sees like some other guy on the train. And he just sees his hand like with the ring. And, you know, when he's taking pictures of her. And then the next day, he sees in the newspaper that the very young woman that he saw get on that train, like it, you know, at whatever time it was like 2 o'clock in the morning or something. So it was like a really late train. He saw her get on there, and it's like she has since disappeared. Now, because he had this picture of her getting on the train and there was this random person's hand with a very distinctive ring on the finger, he's like, well, basically, I need to go to the cops because this person with this ring might have been the last person to see her alive, or, you know, might have been the person that made her disappear. Let's call it that. So he goes to the cops. They seem a little dismissive and they're basically like, well, why didn't you help her? Why, you know, why were you taking pictures of her? Were you stalking? So, you know, so they kind of make him seem like more the guilty party. He's just kind of like, well, whatever. If you want to do something about it, all these people have been going missing and it's like, I'm just trying to help. So whatever. I'm a photographer and I was just trying to take pictures. As it goes on, in New York City, there have been a series of people disappearing from late night subway trains. Now, I believe that you know what's going on like pretty early in the movie because they do show this serial killer, essentially, who's played by Vinnie Jones, who's great in this. And he doesn't say a word, and there's a reason for that, but he doesn't say anything, but he's just like this big hulking, menacing presence. I just remember seeing him in a lot of like British crime thrillers. He always plays like a big, scary gangster dude, it seems like all the time, which typecasting, but you know, what are you gonna do? That's what he looks like and that's the kind of work he gets. But yeah, so Vinnie Jones is basically playing a serial killer who you find out later, his name is Mahogany, and he just rides on this train, like the very last train of the night. And whoever happens to get into the same car with him, Mahogany just goes up and essentially butchers them in really, really horrific, gory ways. Like I said, now the special effects on this, because a lot of the blood flying and stuff like that is CGI, and it does look kind of like CGI-y. Like sometimes, you know, like sometimes in the early seasons of The Walking Dead, it kind of looked like that. So it kind of looks like that, but it doesn't really take too much away. And honestly, I will say that like the violence and the gore and stuff in this is actually like really good. Like I really like the, cause you, a lot of times he uses Mahogany, he'll use like a mallet. Like there's one point there, Ted Raimi actually has a cameo in this and he gets like one of the best deaths because like Mahogany like hits him in the back of the head with like with this big mallet and his eyeball just kind of like pops out like in 3 months. It's like pretty cool. And also there's one too where like a girl gets beheaded and they almost do like severed head cam where the head's like where you're seeing things from the point of view of the severed head and she's looking back at her own body and it's just, it's almost kind of like you're her soul like leaving the body, like it's in her head and that's leaving. So it's like I really, really like, but there's like a lot of really good like gory shots like that. So essentially, Leon, the photographer, he starts getting more and more intrigued by this hulking person who he suspects may have something to do with all of these people going missing. And like I said, they haven't found any bodies or anything like that, but just all these people have been disappearing like from the subways. So he starts to suspect there's something. And the pictures that he took that night of the thugs that were, you know, kind of harassing that woman and the ones of the woman and stuff, and then some of the ones that he took of Mahogany from kind of far away, like he's just this really menacing figure, he actually shows them to Susan, or to Brooke Shields' character, and she's just kind of like, oh, this is more like what I'm talking about. You need to come up with a few more images like this, and then I can put you in one of my group shows, and you know, maybe that'll like kind of jumpstart your career and everything like that. So he basically just starts going out every night, like looking for, you know, stuff to take pictures of, dangerous stuff to take pictures of. And because he's become so convinced that this dude that he keeps seeing, who always looks like he has this like this immaculate suit and he's always like carrying this briefcase or whatever. And he's like, so he sees this guy every night, like getting on the late train. And he's like, there's this guy has got to be, you know, something to do with like these people missing. So he starts essentially following him around. He follows him to work. He works at like a butcher, a meat processing plant or something like that. And so he just starts following him. He tries to take pictures of him, but then, you know, the guy sees him and he like starts intimidating and stuff. Now, during all of this, Leon's girlfriend, who he has sort of proposed to, well, he's like, they're like engaged to be engaged. Like, he gave her a ring, but he's like, well, it's not really an engagement ring. It's almost like a pre-engagement ring, because I guess he thought it wasn't expensive enough, or I don't know what his deal was with that. But yeah, so they're that, they're having that whole thing. But as he starts getting more and more obsessed with this butcher guy, and he's just been going out every night and following him around, and, you know, the whole dark room, like, he's looking for, you know, old articles about murders that took place, like, going back 100, 200 years, something like that, like, other people disappearing off the subways, and maybe he starts to think that there's some kind of related, that, you know, that some kind of the crimes are related, like, maybe one's a copycat or something like that. So he starts getting pretty much obsessed with it, at which point she's just kind of like, man, you need to, like, knock this off. It's like, one, you're going to get hurt. Two, it's like, you're not sleeping, you're not eating. You know, you've just become obsessed with this one thing. And so there's that whole situation happening too. And then one night it so happens that he ends up getting confronted. He actually, as the story goes on, he actually does see firsthand Mahogany butchering, I believe it's three people. It's like two guys and a woman that are together in the train car, and he gets some photographs of it, at which point Mahogany, like, attacks him and doesn't kill him. He just, like, knocks him out and kind of, like, puts him, you know, back in this, like, dumps him in a subway station, but he takes his camera away. So now he doesn't, like, have any proof. And so the fact that he goes back to his girlfriend and their mutual friend who had, you know, set them up with the art dealer at the beginning, whose name is Jurgis. So they go back to him and he's like, look, I took pictures of it. The guy took my camera. And so the girlfriend and Jurgis, the girlfriend's name is Maya, right? Yeah, I think her name is Maya. So Maya and Jurgis get this idea to break into this dude's apartment without telling Leon to get the camera back, because they're starting to believe that maybe there is something going on and maybe this guy really is a murderer or something. So they need to go get his camera back. So they break in, Jurgis gets, you know, kidnapped and all this other kind of stuff. So now this is going to be spoiler, because I kind of feel like maybe how you feel about this movie is going to depend on how you feel about the direction that it goes in. It's not different. Like, if you read the short story, it's pretty much the same kind of deal. You know, in the short story, and like I said, spoiler alert, the story came out in 1984, so don't jump on my ass too much. It was a long time ago. But in the story, it's basically the same thing. It's like this Mahogany is just like one in a long succession of people who have taken this train, and basically what there are these, in the short story, I think they're called the Elders of New York City. They're kind of like just these ancient godlike, demon-like sort of beings that sort of like run the city, I guess. And they live underground, and they are cannibals, like they eat humans. So they kind of had it worked out with some of the big high up city officials. It's like, hey, if you give us X amount of human meat, you know, every day or every night, then we won't pop out and like eat all of you. So it's kind of like an appeasement sort of thing. And so they always have one person who's like a butcher who's kind of like doomed to ride on this train and kill people and hang them up on the meat hooks, and then the train goes down to the underground lair, you know, where the demons are or whatever, and then the demons will eat them, and it keeps them down there. So it's supposed to, like, keep everything separate. So they have, like, this whole system worked out, and it's been like that for a really long time. And that's essentially what happens in the movie, too. So it's almost kind of like Mahogany, even though from the beginning you think this is, like, a serial killer type story, which it kind of is, but Leon starts following and trying to solve the mystery of this quote-unquote serial killer, but it turns out that Mahogany is only doing this because he sort of like got roped into it however long ago it was, and now he's cursed. And the reason that he never talks is because when you take over this thankless job, they basically pull your tongue out because you're supposed to quote unquote serve in silence. I don't think they say that. I don't remember if they say it in the movie, but they do say it in the story. So that's what they do, like when you are recruited into this job of like killing humans, you know, X amount of humans per night to feed to the whatever, like the creatures that are underneath. In the book, I think they were more like, I don't remember if they were like people, but they were just kind of like, I don't know, demigods or demon type things. In the movie, they're much more like your standard kind of like creature-y, demon-y, reptilian type of things with claws and everything. But it's like, you know, the end result is the same. It's kind of like the same concept. So, because you know early on, fairly early on, you know, probably about halfway during the movie, like through the movie, that Mahogany is not really, like, he looks like a human, but you can tell that he's not really entirely human, because it's like at some point he kind of like pulls his shirt open and there's all these really gross, I don't even know what they're supposed to be. I don't know if they're supposed to be like nipples or tumors or something like that. There's all these like black squishy like things all over his chest. And the nasty thing is that like he cuts them off and then like he puts them in a jar and keeps them. Like, I don't know why he keeps them. And then he has them like all these jars. It's like super disgusting. But yeah, so there's that whole issue. But so you pretty much know where this is going. Like, once Leon twigs onto the fact of like what's going on and starts taking the picture, you know that Leon's going to be the next one, because you've seen like over the course of the movie that Mahogany is kind of getting. I don't know if they really. It's almost kind of like Mahogany is, he's either getting too old to do it, or you can only do it for so long before you start breaking down. Or something like that. Every now and then they have to like get a new one. And so you can tell that Leon, because he's so interested in this and because he's invested so much of his time now to following Mahogany around and figuring out what's going on, that he's gonna have to be the next one. And indeed, that is what happens. Like, Leon actually ends up, they end up killing Mahogany, and Mahogany is just kind of like, almost kind of like happy about it. Like, he's just like he's been released or whatever, because like I said, it's kind of like a curse. And so Leon gets taken to this underground thing. His tongue gets torn out. He either has to, I think like he has to watch the train conductor, who is also in on it, pretty much kill his girlfriend and tear her heart out. And then, you know, he eats it and like, you know, so it's this whole thing. So now he's kind of like doomed to become the subway butcher, just like Mahogany had been doing for however long he'd been doing it. So as I said, this is kind of like, honestly, of all the Clive Barker adaptations that I've seen, other than Hellraiser, I think this is actually, unless there's one that I'm like not thinking of, but of all the ones I've seen, I think I like this one the best, like second after Hellraiser. Like Hellraiser, that's like in a league of its own. That's obviously the best one. But this one's pretty damn good. I mean, I just really, really liked, like I said, the acting in it. Vinnie Jones was like so good in it. He was so good as like Mahogany. Like I said, he doesn't say anything. You know, his body language and his facial expressions, his eyes and everything like that. He just kind of, he's like very stoic, but he also like gives a lot of stuff away. You know, just the way that he moves and things like that. And he's very like intimidating and scary, but he's also, as the story goes on, you almost kind of start to feel sorry for him a little bit, because it's kind of like I don't know if he volunteered for this kind of stuff or if he just got roped into it. And I mean, Leon didn't really volunteer either. He didn't know what he was volunteering for, obviously. So he just kind of got roped into it too. So you can tell that these people didn't really want to do this, but you kind of don't have a choice. Like, once you've gotten tagged, like, tag, you're it. You're like the next subway butcher, whether you like it or not. So I guess that's just kind of, so you kind of have to feel sorry for him, because now every night they're going to have to ride this train and for however long, and, you know, kill random people that come on there, hang them up on the meat hooks, get them ready for the city elders or whatever. And it's just kind of like a pretty shitty existence. Also, there's kind of, I was watching a guy like Ryan Hollinger, and he had done a kind of a breakdown of this. And he was talking about how the theme of the movie is kind of like voyeurism, and kind of like how easy it is to just sort of like detach, because I kind of feel like that's maybe what Leon's character at the beginning, because he was playing everything so safe, because he was just taking pictures of everything from like arm's length, from like a, you know, a distance. He didn't want to get up in anybody's face. He didn't want to get involved in anything. And he was just trying to like take pictures from far away. So then when the art dealer said, no, you need to get like in the mix, you need to, you know, keep shooting, like, even when shit's getting dangerous and stuff. She doesn't say exactly that, but that's kind of what she means. And then, so he starts doing that, and it's almost kind of, like, exciting. But then in the end, he ends up getting, like, way more than he bargained for, obviously. You know what I mean? So it's almost kind of, like, just this really interesting voyeurism involvement kind of theme, and I just, like, really liked it. But yeah, so if you like Clive Barker, if you like the original story, and you've seen this, like, let me know, because like I said, it seems like this got a lot of mixed reviews, but I think a lot of the mixed reviews came from people who didn't like that it took a little bit of a monster-y, supernatural-y sort of turn at the end, but the short story, the original short story, did that too, so I'm not really sure why anyone was surprised. I mean, obviously you'd be surprised if you hadn't read the story, and then it, to you, it would seem like, what the fuck, this monster shit is just coming out of nowhere. But if you read the story, then essentially the short story was the same. Like, they were feeding the human meat to these underground creatures, the Chud, or whatever they were. It was that kind of thing. So it wasn't a shock if you had read the story. But of all the Clive Barker adaptations, like I said, this is actually a really, really good one. And I was surprised, actually, and how good this one was. I mean, just the cinematography looks great. Like, it looks real, it's real slick, and it's real, like, I love all the shots of, like, the empty subway, you know, the empty subway stations and stuff like that. Acting was great in it. Bradley Cooper was great in it. It's just, I don't know, it was just, like, a really, really good kind of mystery slash monster movie. And then it was like, had like some real over the top gore effects that I thought were great. Like I said, the beheading, the eye popping out, just like really, really fun. And like I said, it seemed like a shame that because of, I guess, studio politics or whatever it was, this kind of got a little bit, you know, like I said, it was 100 theaters. That's all it was released in. And then they're like, yeah, just kick that off to DVD and, you know, we'll see what happens. And you know, so I kind of feel like it fell through the cracks a little bit. And like I said, it's kind of a shame because this is actually a really, really decent horror movie, and it's a really, really decent Clive Barker adaptation. So this is actually on Tubi for free now if you want to watch it, at least as of this recording. So let me know if you've seen it, what you thought about it, if you liked it, if you didn't like it, if you read the original short story, you know, if you're a fan of Clive Barker. And which of his adaptations, movie adaptations, is your favorite? Just let me know in the comments, and we'll have a discussion about it. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.